What's that I hear? I think it's Big News Wednesday. And I think it is gonna be one, not only because we've got JR Jackson, the man of Big News Wednesday. How's it going, JR?
What's going on, kid? How you doing? It's Wednesday already. I feel like the week just started, bro.
It does feel like we just did that. You know what I do like, though? I like that this works. You know, you got your new time and everything, but it works. Big load off my mind, and I'm sure the audience is really happy about it.
I feel like you're suggesting this rather than...
I'm just stating it. I'm just going to keep saying it. I'm going to put it out into the universe. So JR is one reason it's Big News Wednesday. The other reason is that there's actually a lot of news. There's an escalation in the growing war between Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis that is just so fun. But in terms of big news, there are a couple things that state governments are trying to do right now that I think are about as anti-democratic as anything I've seen in American politics. So this is big anti-democratic news Wednesday, I think. That's what I'm gonna christen it. In any event, we do have a lot to talk about, including a story in the aftermath. For those of you who stick around for the full show, or if you're watching on the linear platforms, listening to the podcast, definitely head to our YouTube channel where you can watch clips, including clips that you're probably not seeing. We've got Ford making some plans for what I am terming the real world reboot of Maximum Overdrive. They don't think that cars have enough control over our lives, nor enough ability to ruin our lives, and they're working to correct that. So we always try to have a car story for JR, and this is more of a horror story, but we'll see what he thinks. I think you're gonna like it. Nobody buying the cars will like it, but the story's good. Anyway, with that said, we got a lot to talk about. So in advance of that, please hit the like button, share the stream so people know we're live. And if you want to reach out to us with any super chats, tweets, comments, anything like that, you not only might get acknowledged on the show, but also might get a $100 Blue Apron gift card. So give it a try. Something insightful, something funny. We'd love to read your comments. With that said, JR, you ready to do this thing?
I think so.
Okay, I mostly think so. When you combine those two thinks, it's a certainty. Let's jump into this.
Because of what you're wearing?
Because they told me to say anybody wearing Trump has to go right now.
Oh!
Oh, we should put
during the signage.
Free speech.
During the signage.
Free speech.
Okay, I'm sorry, guys. I have to call LPD now.
That's fine. There you go.
That's all right.
So that is outside of a book signing for Ron DeSantis happening just yesterday. Yes, he found a book that he's willing to tolerate. It's his own. He wrote it. But all those people who just wanted to attend the book signing and committed the crime of having Trump signs or Trump clothing, be gone. You've been banished by King Meatball Ron himself. And they didn't like it. Not the regular crazy Trump fans or the special brand of crazy Trump fan activist. I love that they're activists. Who are you helping? Laura Loomer was there, and they did not take kindly to being banned from this site. They seem to not have gotten the memo that all that stuff about free speech and opposing cancel culture is branding. He doesn't actually mean it, but here's more from what happened.
Why are you acting like the far left?
Because we're acting like the far left trying to get Trump elected.
Yeah, well, you're acting like the far left. You're
trying to get Trump elected.
You've got the same.
Trying to get Trump elected. Trying to get Trump elected is the far left.
Yes.
Trying to get Trump elected is the far left.
Listen, I am a Trump supporter.
Well, technically, you shouldn't be over there then.
I'm doing my job, dude.
So are we. So are we.
But you're on private property. You need to leave.
Okay.
Okay, so there's so much, JR, that's just terrible. I mean, the cop being so proud that he is a Trump fan, that he has like emblems on him that he can point to as proof that he's one of the pure ones, declaring that they're being leftist. He means because they're being what, like aggressive or something. But what I love is that like, he's kind of right. Like they don't think they should be banned from a place because of their t-shirt. That does seem a little bit more like the left. I'm thinking that there should actually be access to political events. Of course, it is private property. They can do these sorts of bans if they want to. I just love that like they're just now finding out how fake all of that stuff about free speech and everything was. Jared, what do you think?
I'm not sure, though. I, of course, always think maybe they're finally starting to see how this whole thing works. As they start to have these fights amongst themselves, as primary candidates pop up, the Nikki Haley's and potentially Tim Scott's, and then now we got DeSantis possibly, and Trump is the only one apparently that's in, and they're afraid to fight, is because eventually constituents are going to start seeing the differences between the two of them, or they're going to start seeing actually what it is that many of them employ as far as pushing the other ones followers and supporters away. They're going to start sounding like, oh, wait, we sound a little bit like the far left. We're standing here in the lot with signs and t-shirts on, and one of them said what their job that they're doing there is trying to get Trump elected. How is it you standing in this lot is getting Trump elected? I just want to see how that connects. I mean, maybe working on his campaign, maybe you're going door to door and trying to convince people. Does this get Trump elected? This is how it works? Mm-hmm. So if someone who's undecided sees you guys standing in the parking lot with signs and t-shirts and they're not sure who they were going to vote for, they go, oh, that band of misfits there has convinced me by standing in the parking lot that I should also vote for Trump. It doesn't matter. But now, by the way, I'm just challenging the idea of what he thinks he's doing there. I think they're perfectly fine out there protesting, or I guess protesting, saying, yo, we support Trump. You can do that if you'd like. They're just on the parking lot and they're in this private property area. That's where the problem comes. But I'm glad that maybe you're going to see how each of them employs ways to push the others away, which is going to be tasty.
Yeah, they can do their protest outside or whatever. But of course, they want to be in the store. And, you know, while the infighting is funny or whatever, if they got into the store, it would be chaos. So I think they were right to want to ban them from the store. Honestly, they were definitely going there to ruin the event. Let's be clear about that. But also the event's dumb and I hate him. So flame on. I don't care. But there's no reason to believe that this was necessarily had anything to do with Trump, I guess. It's Trump followers and Laura Loomer's a big fan of Trump or whatever. But that doesn't mean that Trump dispatched these people to the event. But he's going to do that. Like, oh my God, he is going to be tweeting calls to crash all Ron DeSantis events soon. This thing is going to get filthy. Like, there are going to be pigs covered in muck and mud. And they're going to be looking at this race like, I'm not getting anywhere near that. It is going to be so dirty. And eventually, if Ron DeSantis is doing well enough, just crashing the events isn't going to be enough. There are going to be threats. Just everyone prepare yourself, because I don't think we've ever seen a race like this. Ted Cruz didn't pose a good enough threat and wasn't popular enough to Donald Trump back in 2016 to really merit like a all cannons blazing approach from Donald Trump. And obviously there was no real challenger in 2020, not on a national level. We've never really seen anything like this. It is going to be wild. Anyway,
it's going to be fun. But also the thing is, since there's some of these folks are potentially dangerous, you don't want to really be nearby when they start clashing. I'm just saying that in all seriousness. Like, that's the one I think maybe scary point about this. As these tensions maybe possibly begin to flare, we know they don't have very good ways of expressing those emotions.
No, they're going to, if they think that Trump is going to lose, they're going to freak out. And God only knows. Normally that manic, crazy energy has been like sent out towards Biden or the left or Antifa or whatever the hell they think, or trans people or whatever they think is threatening them. But now it is going to be against other Republicans. So, you know, get some popcorn. Anyway, DeSantis's book signing event that was interrupted by the MAGA movement was for his new book, The Courage to Be Free, which he totally wrote. He wrote it. He sat down and he typed it out himself. It's his words and his thoughts. I'm sure of it. But I'm also sure that apparently he didn't do a great job, because reviews of it are scathing. According to Jennifer Zalai of the New York Times, as governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis has been casting himself as a Trump-like pugilist. But the overall sense you get from reading his new memoir is that of the mechanical tryhard, someone who has expended a lot of effort studying which way the wind is blowing in the Republican Party and is learning how to comport himself accordingly. That is obviously what he is. Back when Paul Ryan was on top, he wanted to be a Paul Ryan. Then once the Republican Party moved towards Trump and conspiracy theories and just outright hatred, he's just doing that nonstop. He doesn't have a spine. He doesn't have a core. He's whatever he thinks you want him to be. She goes on to say, peppering the courage to be free with frequent eruptions about the legacy media and runaway wokeness. But all the culture war mad libs can't distract from the dull coldness at this book's core. Even the title, with its awkward feint at boldness while clinging to the safety of cliche, it is the most cliche title I've ever seen in a book. And I've come up with some cliche titles of my own, by the way, so I'd know. Suggests the anxiety of an ambitious politician who really, really wants to run for president in 2024 and knows he needs the grievance vote, but is also trying his best to tiptoe around the Trump dragon 100%. And finally, for the most part, the courage to be free is courageously free of anything that resembles charisma or a discernible sense of humor. That's consistent for Ron DeSantis. While his first book, Dreams from Our Founding Fathers, was weird and esoteric enough to have obviously been written by a human, this one reads like a politician's memoir churned out by ChatGPT. And that's intended as like a cutting barb or whatever, but it's also entirely possible. And by the way, none of these right wingers write their own books. They pay ghostwriters to do it. They also know that the books don't have to be any good. So why wouldn't they just start having ChatGPT produce these things? There's no original thought, there's no charisma, there's no humor. It just needs to be roughly the right thickness for a book. And some right-wing think tank will buy 30,000 copies to make them a New York Times best-selling author. And then they'll end up in dumpsters and stuff like that. Why should a human be involved in any part of that process? Jared, what do you think?
I'd love for any of these folks that support these candidates to tell me if they've read the book. I mean, they'll say they've read it, but I would love for them to prove that they've read these books. That's not the purpose of it. I'm glad you brought that up, because the book has to be the thing that leads into you running for president. If someone releases a book within a year of a presidential election, yes, they're running for president, or at least they're trying to. And by the way, I actually, this scathing review, there was definitely several moments as you read that of like, ooh, which actually makes me kind of want to read it. It's like watching a bad movie. I like to scroll through Netflix sometimes when I'm bored. I was like, I'm just gonna find a random movie I've never heard of that looks really bad. And I hope it's as bad as it looks, because I enjoy bad movies every once in a while. They're actually very entertaining, as you detail. So this may be one of those in the book form.
Yeah, maybe. I sometimes do that too, but it's such an investment. A full movie, I don't know. Anyway. So yeah, again, it doesn't matter. The book could be absolute dog food. It doesn't matter. He's going to be a book bestseller. Some Republicans will actually buy it. They won't read it. They won't have the courage to be literate. But it'll mostly be bought by think tanks. It'll be donor money that'll just gobble up a whole bunch of it. No one will actually read it, and he knows that. He doesn't care. It's all a grift. That's what it is. Ron DeSantis really doesn't need this stunt at his book signing that makes the Trump wing look aggressive and him look defensive and for censorship and all of that, especially now, because some of the movement in the polls, and I get that we're super early still, is not looking great for him. Some of these recent polls include one where he's down 30. There's an ACP poll, Emerson College polling. He's down 30 to Donald Trump. None of the other candidates really matter much. Mike Pence is at 8%, Nikki Haley's at 5%. And you know who would like that combined 13%? Ron DeSantis. But he can't have it as long as they're running. That's the way it works. And you can see here another poll, Yahoo, YouGov. He's down, looks like, what's that, 16 points there. And again, a few extra points going to these other candidates who he can really use it. And this isn't just floating out in the ether. Every single day, Donald Trump is tweeting out stuff like this one. We already showed you the results of this, but he's sending these out. And beyond just gloating over the poll results, which, look, he spent a lot of time back in the day tweeting fake poll results. He's at 99% with the Republican Party, doesn't link it to anything. In this case, he can actually point to it and be like, I am up big. We know he likes that. At the same time, as I've been discussing on the pre-port this week, he's getting a little bit better at his attacks against Ron DeSantis. Not necessarily in terms of the names, but it might be that some of the movement we've been seeing in the past few weeks is based on some of the policy attacks coming from Donald Trump to Ron DeSantis. I want to read part of this to show that he has been hammering this message now for a couple of weeks straight, with him bleeding, great poll numbers are springing forth for your favorite president. how poetic, me against Ron DeSantis and Biden. I guess people are finding out that he wanted to cut Social Security and raise the minimum wage to, or the age to at least 70, at least four times. Likewise with Medicare, wanted big cuts. He is a wheelchair over the cliff kind of guy. You know that type of guy, right? What are you talking about, you maniac? What type of guy is that? But anyway, forget the wheelchair thing. You shouldn't. It's deeply distressing, but we're going to move on. He is hammering. He wants to cut your Medicare. He wants to cut your Social Security. He wants to raise the entire retirement age. And I don't know if that's actually working against Ron DeSantis, but I desperately hope that it is for so many reasons.
Yeah, they're going to have to answer questions really fast. They're going to have to answer questions. Now, I love it that he's doing this. This is part of the thing when they say Donald Trump will sabotage on accident Republican chances and even Senate races like he did in Georgia and things like that. It's because he'll just say things all being self-righteousness, but not realizing he's throwing the entire party under the bus, including things that he also supports or doesn't support and things of those natures. So people are going to have to start seeing the differences. That's why Nikki Haley didn't say what the difference was. The reasons why the other candidate, the finance guy, decided not to say any differences with Trump is because then people are going to have to start looking at it and going, yo, really, you're different there? Wait a second, how is he here? The only time they'll listen is when it's people that they trust. And oddly, they'll trust the biggest liars in the country.
Yeah, I
can't wait.
Okay, so hold on. We might have to delve into the video part of this tomorrow. So we're gonna do a follow up. I've been trying to figure out since yesterday what the wheelchair over the cliff thing is.
Oh, I can tell
you. Assumed, what's that? Wait, hold on really fast. I'll tell you what I thought it was, and then you tell me what you think it is. I thought it was a reference to Mac and Me, that old school movie. Remember Paul Rudd would come on Conan O'Brien and he'd always play the cliff from Mac and Me? Or a clip from Mac and Me. That's apparently not what it is. What do you think it is?
I remember there was, maybe it was in 08, around, the Obama's time, when they had the ads, the filthy ads against each other. I'm not sure who ran it. Of them, basically, you're getting rid of grandma and you're running a wheelchair off the cliff. Like it's healthcare, This is their healthcare.
Ding, ding, ding. Winner, winner, JR Dinner.
Yeah.
I just found this. It's from 2012. Which was, I guess, I would have been working here for about 9 months. I should probably remember this, but man, JR, that is good memory right there. So look, we're gonna play
these ads.
Yeah, that doesn't mean it's definitely that. It could still be Mac and Me. So we're gonna play the clips on tomorrow's show with Jordan, and we're gonna have a little poll about which we think it actually is. But in any event, yeah, make it about that stuff, man. Make it about Medicare and Social Security, and it's not only true, which I like. I find that to be novel. I know it's not popular to base your attacks in truth, but I like it. I'm kinky like that. But anyway, it's substantive and it hurts DeSantis while also undercutting Republican attempts to cut these programs now.
It's so
honestly
wonderful.
Bring it on,
it's
Trumpy.
So wonderful.
I want Trump to do this and then lose viciously.
Yep.
And then as I tweeted earlier, probably have a heart attack on the can. Anyway, with that said, that's the brewing feud between those two. We're going to move into a story more central to Donald Trump's future right now. Donald Trump's call after the 2020 election with Brad Raffensperger in Georgia was super clear. He wanted him to find just enough votes that he wins. He was asking an election official to overturn the results of the election. It is clear. I feel it's indisputable. And I think most reasonable people agree. However, Trump's legal team is not filled with reasonable people, and they have some unreasonable ideas of how they can get him out of any legal consequences for this. This is wild, but here's what they want to do. One of the lawyers is Drew Findling, who apparently built a career representing the biggest names in hip hop, like Cardi B, Migos, and Gucci Mane, argues there's a link between prosecutors' controversial use of rap lyrics to buttress criminal charges against hip hop stars and Trump's call with Brad Raffensperger. Now, are you following me yet? You're probably not, because we're in crazy town. But what he's saying is that you can't just pluck out a quote in the same way you can't pluck out a lyric from a rap song. You have to understand the full context. So he goes on to say, when we look at the full context, that's when we realize there's no criminal case. And that's one of the reasons that we jumped into this case when asked to. That and also the money, crazy, stupid money that, bear in mind, probably won't be paid to them. This is Trump after all, but I bet he made promises of a lot of money. Anyway, the quote in question, the biggest money quote, is when Trump said, "So look, all I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have because we won the state." And Findling says, you can't focus on that. You need to look at the full call in its totality. Prosecutors, first of all, don't know the first thing about lyrics. He's still talking about lyrics. They'll take out 8 or 9 words. They'll take out something that lasts a few seconds and say, aha, this is evidence of some wrongdoing. In like fashion, no one ever talks about the full 62 minutes. No one ever talks about the surrounding circumstances of those 62 minutes of the phone call. JR, is this rap lyric defense going to save Trump's bacon?
I mean, honestly, we're at the point now that anything saves Trump's bacon because they won't finish going after him. But I mean, this is an attempt, right? And it's one of those things. It's the irony, of course, in this is that Trump will probably quickly throw any hip hop artists under the bus or claim that they're thugs and violent criminals and espouse dangerous things and society's on the downfall because of it. We know conservatives like to say that. So I'm sure he would say he'd be on those same types of points. But when it comes to saving his own ass, then it comes to, hey, let me use that defense that this one attorney uses when it comes to those thugs and people who throw this horrible violent discourse into our society. So he's okay doing that when it comes to saving himself, but of course not when it comes to even talking about the context of anything anyone's saying for entertainment purposes, by the way. This is a guy that's on a private phone call, I guess. Maybe he doesn't realize that he's talking to the Secretary of State down there, and that maybe this guy might point out, or at one point testify about what the context of those calls were. Maybe Raffensperger, who was on the other side of that phone call, just doesn't know the implications of it, or doesn't know the full context. He was only there and listening to it. He's only the one who was threatened or told, hey, maybe you should do this. Maybe they'll ask Zelensky next when he threatened him about the quid pro quo that he was involved in with him. Oh yeah, it was just a rap lyric. It was just one moment in this long call. I'm sure they'll say that too. I'm not sure if it'll work, but at this point, you know, things always work that shouldn't when it comes to protecting and saving the worst people in our country, like this guy. So I mean, I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah, he was only threatened, and his wife was threatened with rape and murder and all that. What does he know? By the way, I don't want to spoil this novel defense by pointing out that you know who has read the transcript of the full call? This guy. I have too much time on my hands and not enough self-respect. You know what the context of that call provides? A whole lot more of what's in that quote. It isn't necessarily as individually explicit as those 13 or so words, but he constantly talks about that exact number of votes. He constantly says we need to find the votes. The context doesn't make it look better, Findling. It makes it look worse. Anyway, by the way, just for context, we'll see. Again, context, because I value context like Findling does. In August, in reference to charges against rapper Young Thug, Fulton County DA Fannie Willis told a press conference, "I think if you decide to admit your crimes over a beat, I'm gonna use it. I have some legal advice. Don't confess to crime on rap lyrics if you do not want them used, or at least get out of my county." So the DA apparently doesn't buy the whole rap lyric context thing. Anyway,
and that Trump has happened, I'm sure.
Exactly. Trump has responded to these sorts of claims many times in the past, pointing out that his call was perfect. I guess he means when you consider the context. Florida has been increasingly red in recent years and increasingly radical along with it. The Republicans have their favorite governor in Ron DeSantis, and they apparently feel so emboldened that they're pretty much done tolerating the Democratic Party. And I don't mean that in metaphoric terms. I mean that they're pushing to banish it. No more Democratic Party in Florida. This is wild. This is being pursued by Senator Blaise Ingoglia, Republican of Spring Hill, has this new bill, SB 1248. It doesn't mention the word Democrat or Democratic, but let's see if we can figure out how it's talking about them. It's the ultimate cancel act, according to him. It would decertify any political party that ever included a plank to support slavery in its platform, something the Democratic Party did between 1844 and 1864, which I imagine is a year or two ago. After this is passed, registered voters of that party would receive notices from the state that their party had been canceled and that there are now no party voters for the canceled Democratic Party. They could re-register as long as the name is substantially different from the name of any other party previously registered. So what you should understand is that Blazing Goglia wants you to believe that this is him being clever or joking around. The issue is that it's not funny. He clearly supports the fascist destruction of his political opponents and thinks that this is a clever way to do it. Just destroy the Democratic Party outright to make some sort of point about how Democrats are canceling too much. It's undercut a little bit by the fact that the Republican Party is going around Florida trying to find literally every book they can to set fire to. So that's sort of an issue, as well as pushing entire communities into the shadows. So if you want to make a clever point about cancellation, maybe look in the mirror there in Goglia. But anyway, we're gonna have more quotes from him, JR. What do you think about what they're trying to do?
Well, this is the thing. He's gonna be embarrassed when he discovers that, you know, as he's pointing out, the Democratic Party in that time frame had that plank in their, you know, in their party plans or agenda that included slavery, right? He's gonna be really upset when he discovers that the current folks in his party also support those types of things. In fact, they support the things that that came from it. They still support police with qualified immunity as they beat and kill people that they think they can beat and kill and have this level of immunity. So the prison systems and the way that we incarcerate people and our judicial system and the way it's biased against certain other folks, all born from that evil moment back in the day that he's trying to make sure is decertified from that party. So it's grown from there. So I would hope, in being the principled Republican that he is, that he'll continue to be against all the things that came from it. But first, he's going to have to discover that those things did come from it, and that we have many systems in our society that are based off of those rules and those platforms from way back in the day. He's going to be really upset when he has to discover the people that he's trying to decertify have grown into the people that he surrounded himself with. Mm-hmm. And after he looks in the mirror, he's going to go, oh, it's me too. He knows this. His supporters know it. And it's the same ploy over and over and over again to act like, you know what the party did back in the day?
Yeah.
Who's supporting it now? What are your are your supporters saying about these types of debates and things now? When someone says Black Lives Matter, or when they say maybe you should stop murdering black folks indiscriminately and think you can get away with it. When people say those things, and then you, who was against the discrimination and enslavement of black Americans here, are now saying that this is a problem. You're gonna have to be consistent, because I guess if we flesh this out, we'll see who you really are.
100%. Look, if you want to acknowledge that the Democrats 160 years ago did this, I think that's a great point. We should understand that history. You don't even have to go back 160 years to have issues with the racial politics of the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go back a year. Let's have that conversation. But if you're aggrieved by the fact that the Democrats were this way 160 years ago, why doesn't it bother you that your base is that way now? Like right now, as JR is pointing out. And by the way, this isn't like some wild speculation. You guys can't go a day without minimizing the horrors of slavery. You get off on trying to say that it really wasn't that bad. Ask Americans at large what they think about different racial groups. And you can see that there's plenty of racism to go around, certainly, but clustered amongst Republicans is a horrendous grouping of racial stereotypes against not only black Americans, but basically everyone else. And so all of this is out there, Blaze. Take a look at it. And by the way, I just want to respond to one of his comments. So he says, for years now, leftist activists have been trying to cancel people and companies for things they've said or done in the past. First of all, you are so excited about the fact that Ron DeSantis is attacking Disney for having a same-sex cartoon kiss. So again, glass houses. Anyway, this includes the removal of statues and memorials and the renaming of buildings. Using this standard, it would be hypocritical not to cancel the Democratic Party itself for the same thing. Yeah, but it's not the same thing. You're talking about something that was 160 years ago, not a monument right now to that thing. That's the difference. But anyway, he says that the legislation is in response to leftist activists calling for the removal of blah, blah, blah. Some people want to have uncomfortable conversations about certain subjects. Let's have those conversations. No, but see, you're saying that in an, I can't say the word I want to say, an SE little way. That's how you're saying, let's have it. But you don't actually want to have it. We want to have it. That's the whole, like, that's the whole philosophical underpinning of being woke, is acknowledging these inconvenient truths and understanding things that aren't necessarily super comfortable to you. We do actually want to have that conversation. You very much don't. That's why you guys are going around to universities and schools around the state and literally banning the teaching of these things, stripping literature out of those libraries. Don't pretend that you want to have uncomfortable conversations. Your entire political ideology is based around not being exposed for even a microsecond to the least inconvenient of facts, potentially. We're ready to acknowledge the truth, the historic truth of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party and America at large. And we're also willing to do it right now. Don't pretend that you have even one bit of those philosophical cojones. Anyway, JR, quick final point. We have other anti-Democrats.
Wait until he discovers, you know, all those monuments for all those Confederates during wartime back in the day when they were fighting to keep enslaved folks, which political party they probably associated themselves with. Maybe he wants to tear down all their statues. I'm on board.
Why are you fighting to keep those racist Democratic statues up? It almost seems like you have a closer attachment to them than the Democrats do. Weird. But anyway, I want to move on to this other topic. I often state that the Republicans know that their position on many issues is wildly unpopular. It just seeps from their statements about this. But they're also making it very clear in terms of what they're doing. Mississippi is on the precipice of potentially allowing ballot initiatives again. So the ability of people to propose things and vote on them popularly. But they're going to be banning any that have to do with abortion. Now, I could jump in and say, kind of seems like you know that the people of your state don't agree with you on this topic, but I don't need to do that because they're going to do that. The initial version of the resolution had no provisions related to abortion. Those were added Tuesday. Representative Fred Shanks, the Republican chair of the House Constitution Committee, told reporters there was concern among GOP lawmakers that Mississippi voters might use the initiative process to expand abortion access, which is now tightly restricted. There was some concern about it. Yeah, Shanks says. There was some concern about democracy, about the fact that the people of your state don't agree with you on this. They're legislating the quiet part out loud. Our position is so unpopular that we need to ban the ability of you to change things. Now, there's other things that they don't have to change, JR. They don't have to change their position on this because they know that it's irrelevant that the people of Mississippi don't agree with them because everything is so carefully gerrymandered that is impossible to get these people out of office. But they're not going to allow them to use popular democracy to make the changes, even though they are acknowledging by doing this that people don't agree with them.
Situational democracy is what these books are about. Hey, we'll do it up to a point. And then once we're tired of having to deal with this whole democracy thing and actually legislating based off of the people, we're going to go ahead and cut that off. And the people will celebrate. You talked about the Mandalorian earlier. Isn't that a line from one of the early Star Wars? Like, you know, the end of democracy and it comes to thunderous applause. Am I right? Did I land that?
Natalie Portman, she said it. That's
and
true.
Yo, those libs like to call these things, and then I guess these conservatives just like to carry them out.
I guess so. But I'm pretty sure that the rebels believed it 160 years ago. Anyway, it's just look, me pointing this out, by the way, understand that these sorts of gotchas where you're like, oh, this is clearly anti-democratic, that's not going to stop them from doing it. I mean, this probably won't pass, but it's not going to stop them from doing it. They know what they're doing. Their base loves this because their base, like their voters, knows that people don't agree with them, that their positions are wildly fringe and radical and people don't like them. But they're going to do it anyway because they don't care about democracy. We point out that this is a war on democracy because it's a value that we hold, that democracy is good and should be protected. They do not share that principle, and they are proving it with moves like this on a daily basis. That said, I want to move on to one more topic with the time that we have in this block. So let's jump into this. The Biden administration has announced earlier this week that they are going to be undergoing a wider crackdown on the labor exploitation of migrant children around the country. And apparently this is needed, not only because this is always a problem, but it's becoming far worse. And thankfully, the New York Times has published an investigation, which might have caused some of this reaction by the Biden administration, into how much growth of child labor we're seeing in industries across the country. So you've got 12-year-old roofers in Florida and Tennessee, underage slaughterhouse workers in Delaware, Mississippi, and North Carolina, children sawing planks of wood on overnight shifts in South Dakota, In LA, right here, children stitch Made in America tags into J. Crew shirts. They bake dinner rolls sold at Walmart and Target, process milk used in Ben and Jerry's ice cream. Hopefully Ben and Jerry's will change their contractors, and help debone chickens sold at Whole Foods. They make Fruit of the Loom socks in Alabama. They make auto parts in Michigan used by Ford and General Motors. And this is just becoming more and more common, not only using child labor, including migrant child labor, but having them do increasingly difficult jobs for longer periods of time in conditions where accidents and injuries are becoming the norm. JR, what do you think?
This is one of those things. We did this story, similar, one of these aspects that you had mentioned there last week or two, where there's the slaughterhouse scenarios where those children were being used overnight, working and cleaning up around blades and industrial equipment on floors and full on rubber, wetsuits and then goggles over their eyes, and then they'd go on to school. So, again, this is one of those things that should be very easily agreed across all political lines, because I guess everyone that wants to say it openly is in favor of protecting children. Now, it's a matter of whether or not they really believe in it or not. This should be one of those slam dunks that really both sides of the aisle should be eager to be talking about. Yo, we want to stop this, we want to stop this, we want to stop that. The problem just might be the type of children that are being used in general for these types of things. And once you start advocating for them to not be in these conditions, you might have to start considering that they're humans. And then as they grow up, that they're still humans. And then when they become adults and then their parents are around, they're all humans. And what we can't do there is acknowledge their humanity, because then the next step might have to be, well, why is it again that we treat them like they're subhuman? Why is it that we then say that they're not allowed any kind of rights? And then once they are here contributing to our society, they get nothing for that as well too. All those things would have to be answered. So I have a feeling there's a certain segment of the population that's gonna avoid even talking about this.
Yeah, 100%. Well, thankfully, these investigations are ongoing. You had, by the way, just really fast, New York Times looked into Hearthside Food Solutions, which contracts out to make some incredibly popular foods that you might eat any given day. Chewy granola bars, Lucky Charms, Cheerios, Cheetos, super common stuff. And they are employing child labor in the production of these foods. By the way, to give you an idea of some of the new regulation that's needed, one of the things they're pushing for is raising the maximum penalties for companies that violate these laws. We were talking about something like this when it came to the train violations. Right now, the maximum civil monetary penalty is $15,138 per child, a figure that the administration notes is not high enough to be a deterrent. Clearly it isn't, because they're doing this all over the place. And I'm glad that some focus is being put on this. These sorts of monetary fines are always suspiciously set at a level that seems like the companies would be perfectly willing to pay to continue business as usual. Maybe we need to take a second look at that. Okay, unfortunately, we're running out of time. So we're gonna take a second break. When we come back, Eric Adams starts talking about the separation of church and state, and I really wish he hadn't. Okay, everybody, continue to stay very much all the way off of my back. And with that said, we're gonna jump into some other news, starting with this.
If we are bringing our best fight in the ring, we would not have homeless in this city. We would not have a crisis of domestic violence. We would not have children, because when we took prayers out of schools, guns came into schools.
He's a Democrat, right? If I vaguely remember, Eric Adams is supposed to be a Democrat. He's delivering a speech Lindsey Graham or Ted Cruz could have. Yes, you've nailed it. It's when we took prayer out of schools, the guns came into schools. Oddly enough, I have a feeling that when the guns come into schools, plenty of children are desperately praying to be protected. Unfortunately, their politicians have abandoned them. No word on whether God has, but I know for sure the politicians have. So that's Eric Adams pretending that we just need more stick-to-itiveness and maybe more religion, and then we wouldn't have issues with the unhoused or with guns in schools. Those sorts of vague affirmations help no one, but they sound good in a speech, don't they, JR?
Every time, especially when you're trying to convince enough people that you're this moral, principled, high ground taking person. Every time, it's one of these events, you know, it's the, I forget the national one they always have. Yeah, the national prayer breakfast, where then politicians have to go up there and talk about how much they love Jesus and love God and how it's infused in their politics, and everyone that doesn't agree with it are all immoral, devastatingly demonic human beings and all that same stuff. It's a clout chase. And I'm not sure where his belief systems are as far as in his heart. I know he says things like this a bunch about his belief systems, how much he trusts and believes in God and how that then shapes his policy making. But then in this case, he's going to have to then answer next. Because he knows, as you pointed out, he's a Democratic politician. So he's heard that people talk about the problems with the shootings in our school. But he's just going in this route. Maybe he got caught up in the moment because it was like, you know, a couple hours worth of this entire event. So he's like, you know, I got to speak the way that people in this crowd are speaking or listening to. And then what? How does that work? So you're looking to implement prayer back in the schools to make it mandated and things like that? That question has to be asked next. And then what's his answer going to be? Yes, that's my platform. Is it? Or are you just talking out of your ass?
Yeah, I just it's a way that politicians talk to get out from having to actually do something or to seem folksy in a shallow way. By the way, if prayer is important to you, that's totally fine. You're a regular person. You should be very suspicious of powerful people who are well connected, tapped in, trying to use that to evade responsibility. In any event, he continues on the topic of church and state. Take a look at this.
Oh, tell me about no separation of church and state. State is the body, church is the heart. You take the heart out of the body dies. I can't separate my belief because I'm an elected official. When I walk with God. When I talk with God. When I put policies in place, I put them in with a God-like approach to them. That's who I am.
Jumped ahead of himself a little there with a God-like approach. That's not you being with God. That's you casting yourself as God, just to be clear. In any event, do I need to point out that in New York, there's probably literally millions of people who don't follow his religion, that don't follow any religion, that when you took the church out of their heart, they didn't die. They continue to lead perfectly fine, productive, moral lives. Again, you can lead that life with Christianity or Buddhism or Hinduism or Islam or Judaism or whatever. You can also do it with literally none of those. Millions upon millions of Americans do it every single day. And I'm assuming that they would love to not be spit in the face by the person who's supposed to be supporting them. A guy who is supposed to be following the Constitution. That's supposed to be the sacred document that he's upholding and not making clear that when those two things potentially are in conflict, we know where he's going to go. JR.
It's odd because, you know, he mentions the heart and the body. If you take the brain out of the body, it also dies as well. You know, we can just throw these analogies around all we want, considering that's not what he's using in this case either. Again, this is all just another clout chaser. I don't know. I'm not sure how this is going to benefit him. But so let's go ahead and float it then. Since it's going to be, I guess he's going to implement this in schools. What happens once Muslim students and teachers and administrators want to roll out the prayer rug and then face Mecca and then pray? I hope I have it right. I don't know many of the tenets of Islam, and I'm not trying to disparage it anyway. But what if Muslims do start carrying out their religious principles and their ways of praying in the middle of school? And it's mandated? Is it mandated or is it allowed for them to do it? Because which kind of religion are we talking about?
Yeah,
it goes back to the same thing every time. They say freedom of religion. What they mean is bias policies towards Christianity. They think that's religion equals Christianity. They think there's no other religion. Like, it's Christianity and that's it. So when I say I believe in prayer in schools, we automatically are supposed to think that it's about Christian prayer. What if it's not, bro?
Yeah, they think that if a Christian gets elected, that is warrant to just do a Christian government. Do you believe that they think that if a Muslim got elected, that means, well, then obviously the government should be Muslim? No, they definitely don't think that. Again,
in fact, they call that invasion, John.
Yeah, they would call that invasion. And by the way, a Muslim getting elected doesn't mean that they would want to suddenly make government Islamic in any particular way. Just a thought experiment to point out that, as with so much else in politics, like 99% of the things that are asserted as if they're based on a principle are not. It's just pragmatism. That's all it is. It's power for me. And if you ever get it, you shouldn't get it. You shouldn't have any power or influence. That's the way it works. I'm assuming he's going to get a lot of pushback. He has not responded well to criticism in the past, Eric Adams. So I doubt he really cares about the fact that he's insulting millions of his constituents. We'll see what happens. With that said, we got one more topic to close out the hour. Whenever we're ready, we can jump into this.
Josh. Dressing in drag in 1977.
What a ridiculous question that is. Conflating something like that to sexualized entertainment in front of children, which is a very serious subject.
Drag is not sexual.
Andy, what you got?
So what you have there is Bill Lee, Tennessee governor, who's signing this bill to ban these sorts of performances. And oops, it turns out that he dressed in drag. He dressed, you can see the picture right here. Tennessee Holler did a great job in that video, and they had a little screenshot there too. That's Bill Lee. And it's ridiculous that you would assert that these are the same things. All I was doing was dressing up in that way with my friends and having fun. And what they're doing is dressing up in that way with their friends and having fun. It is the exact same thing done for largely the same reason. They might make more of an artistic performance out of it. But that's what they're doing. So it was fun for you. You get to do it again. Anything you do is perfectly fine, despite the fact that you're surrounded by other students at that point. That was a yearbook photo. You were doing that in front of minors. You were a minor when you did it. Why would you dabble in that sort of thing? How deluded you are. All these ridiculous arguments that you make. Again, doesn't matter. Nothing matters. He could have done drag in the past and still ban it right now, and they're going to be perfectly fine with the JR. But I love that at least they're sticking the hypocrisy to him with appearances like that.
Once these guys say this type of stuff, just go ahead and make sure that whoever's talking to the guy was speaking to him, recap what they just said. He's like, oh, that's ridiculous. They get offended too once truth is put in front of their face. So he's like, oh, that's ridiculous. How could you be? This is just all in fun. And there was a bunch of other Republican politicians who were excusing it as well. Once they do, then go ahead and point out. So the problem is that it's not you. That's the only problem. So what you believe is these laws that you're trying to put in place should only apply to people that you don't like. So you believe that there should be a two-tier justice system in this country, because that's what you guys always deny and that's what we always see. But then now that you're looking to implement that, just say it, bro. Tell me why it's not. Prove to me why that's not what you're doing, because we've just described exactly that, and that's your point of view.
Yeah, this is just, look, he got caught out. He doesn't, maybe he remembers that he did that. It was a long time ago. Maybe he doesn't. But again, it doesn't matter. He is going to judge himself by very different standards than everyone else, because that makes things easy for him and harder for the people he doesn't like. That's it. And he knows that his base is also going to judge those other people in a very different way. There's no consistency here. There's no principle. There's no true value system. From his point of view, though, like, if you're a conservative and you're watching this, do you get how convenient this is for people in elected office to pretend to be freaked out about this constantly? Did you know what they're doing and have been doing for decades and decades and decades, and it never bothered anyone up until now? And we're going to talk about this constantly. And weirdly enough, we're just not going to find time for other stuff. Isn't that weird that we can like talk about this a ton and you guys will cheer us? Yeah, you're dealing with that core problem that's like messing with my life and making it so I can't retire with dignity or buy a home or have my kids go to college or whatever. Isn't it weird how they have this thing dished up to them by right-wing pundits, all of whom would call themselves populists that supposedly are really like hard on corporations, but they focused on this thing where they get to attack an outgroup with no political power and talk about it constantly and do little else, and you guys love them for it? Isn't that super convenient for them? John, I just hate seeing people be played so blatantly.
If he's so principled, and he should be one to be bragging about how he came from this soiled lifestyle of being a drag queen, he used to dress up in women's clothing. He should be giving his testimony. I was once one of those people, and now I'm different. How come he's trying to cover it up and hide it? Is he embarrassed by it? Was there sexual undertones to it?
I don't know. He had a super short skirt. Was there supposed to be sexual undertones? Was he trying to Like, I don't know what he was trying to do with that. What was he doing? Why was he doing it? Why is a choice that a choice that he made? I don't know. A lot of remaining questions for Bill Lee of Tennessee. Anyway, that is unfortunately all the time we have for the first hour of the Damage Report today. But there is more to come on the full show in the aftermath. So don't go anywhere. JR and I will be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.